is rolling.
Is this one recording?
Yep, the red light's on. Okay, let's say a word of prayer. Lord Jesus, we're thankful for this day and opportunity to do your service. Lord, you said you should know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And that's what we're interested in accomplishing here today, in Jesus' name. All right, now one more little technical thing that kind of, it's weird, but it goes like this. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, Kate, I'll tell you. What I just did is simply to synchronize the cameras. It's not anything magical.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean, oh my God, the countdown is here. What we're going to do, we're just going to record a bunch of stuff here, and we can do some more tomorrow. If we forget something today, it doesn't matter. We can put it in. If you think of something in 20 minutes that should have been said right up front, it doesn't matter.
Great.
We are simply wanting to reduce this down to tape so that it doesn't get lost.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the big job lays ahead. That's the editing. Okay? So I want you just to completely relax. There is nothing that can't be done, redone, if we sneeze, if we cough, if, you know, anything.
That's reassuring.
If the ceiling caves in, all we do is clean up the mess and keep going.
Okay.
So everything here is real laid back. You got a lot of information, and we want to get this down into a storyline, because I think what you've got here is something that is extremely important for people to know about.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about you and see now you. Where'd you start out your life? You were born and raised in the country?
I was raised on a farm. In fact, I live in the same neighborhood in which I grew up. It was my grandfather's farm. Part of it was divided into thirds. But in 1939, my grandfather was an obstetrician in Norfolk. He was also in the Naval Reserves. He was in charge of military intelligence in Norfolk, which is the largest military naval complex in the world. So I was born in the Naval Hospital, which was the NATO headquarters.
Uh-huh.
And brought home to my grandparents' farm. My father was in the South China Seas on a naval vessel. My uncle was in the Navy. So I come from a long line of military civilian folks. They were not full time military individuals. They had jobs, and they would go into the war. They would be in reserves, and as my grandfather was, he stayed in.
Mm-hmm.
And retired a Navy captain. But I live in a house that was in part of my grandfather's field.
And, is that right?
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
But I'm being strangled financially by this Army intelligence group, JAG group, that my husband...
JAG, is that J-A-G?
JAG, Judge Advocate General. I think American citizens do not realize how many JAGs are in our court system, and they take orders. They are in the chain of command, they're active reserve, and they are in our court system everywhere you look.
Not just federal, state,
local?
Local,
everywhere, yeah. And they're going to meetings once a month, and if there is a case, like many of the military intelligence wives, like myself, and we have information that would come out in a divorce hearing or whatever, they totally control it. It is Judge John Moore, in my case, in Virginia Beach, is an Army Ranger. He is active reserve. He's a VMI Army colonel. He's a graduate of VMI. In Virginia Beach, in the courts, there are at least six judges, and I'm including commissioners in that, because in Virginia we have a system where the commissioners do a lot of the decisions. And all of these in Virginia Beach who take care of military wives,
mm-hmm,
are military judges.
No, you missed the term VMI. What is that?
Well, VMI is Virginia Military Institute, and it's where General Marshall, the Marshall Plan, went to school. It's a little West Point. There's a lot of tradition there, but it's based on the Greek sort of Spartan military concept. And my father went to Washington and Lee, which is also in Lexington. And I know that there is some sort of, I won't say cult, but there probably is some sort of
club,
secret society.
Okay.
And so it's very, very tight click. But what I was trying to say is that the judges are military men, and they're not independent. They take orders.
They take orders.
There's a chain of command, and in my particular case and the other 11 military wives that whom I have met so far, there are many, many more, but they've all been handled the same way.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a normal divorce at all.
Yeah, I've heard of these kind of situations before, but it's never been put so concisely and so reasonably that there would be a connection why some people just, no matter what attorney you have, it doesn't matter.
Oh, no.
The divorces and the settlements of assets never go the right way.
No, and there's a FISA court, which I know is involved in my case.
What kind of court?
Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It's a Justice Department secret court that American citizens are not aware of. There have been a couple of articles on it. It's a small group of men, and I think there's a woman on it. I believe there's seven justices. And in reality, the article that I read, which was given to me by Mike Fuller, and I know he would not mind me using his name. He's a government assassin. He was a government assassin who did...
When you say assassin, you're talking like character assassination or kill people?
No, killing people.
Okay.
He's a mercenary, government mercenary.
Okay.
He was in Afghanistan and in Rhodesia, South Africa. And I met him and his wife through Sarah McClendon. He's a real wonderful patriot who is speaking out about what the NATO community and the Army and Marine Corps are doing.
And Sarah McClendon, she's an old war horse, isn't she?
Sarah saved my life, literally.
Really?
Yeah. I had been having break-ins starting the night of March the 4th, after I was calling everywhere to see if I could find my husband. He would, you know, disappear at times. And I found my husband's diary, which I have here, which they have been not anxious to have get out.
Uh-huh. No, they meaning?
General Sheehan, General Krulak, Marine Corps colonels, generals, Al Gray, Cook, and especially General Joy.
Joy.
General Jim Joy.
Uh-huh.
And General Carl Steiner they're evil men. And they were in this diary meeting with my husband almost every day in Beirut. They trained the men in black who killed those people in Waco. It was General Joy and General Steiner. Steiner's army. Dirty tricks, special operations. And this is what my husband does for a living. is train mercenaries, young boys from countries like Romania, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Haiti, all these countries. They're training them to be murderers. And the taxpayers' dollars are paying for this.
Okay, now they train them just through the normal channels of the military. These kids join the Army of the Marine Corps, and then they select these kids based on some criteria to train them?
They psychologically profile them. The profile, which is similar to my husband's and Lee Harvey Oswald's and McVeigh's and some of the others who were all part of this program. Daimler, Jeffrey Daimler was profiled and hidden. You know, they, what most Americans do not know is that all of these men were
Jeffrey
Army.
Daimler, he has a military background?
Of course. They're all Army.
Okay.
They were all picked out because they're perverted or twisted.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sexually perverted.
Sexually perverted and therefore, you know.
Yeah.
Well, now, I don't think McVeigh was perverted the way Daimler was, but uh-huh. certainly the group that my husband is overseeing are mm-hmm. twisted.
So they part of the criteria, they look for people who have got something in their history that gives them a weird bend.
Yeah.
They were molested when they were a child, yeah. or they come from dysfunctional families, abuse, whatever.
Strong mother, weak father, no father, poor. Because these guys are looking for security, so they will stay in the military and do anything
okay.
for that security. This was my husband's scenario. My husband and Oswald are just two peas in a pod.
Huh.
Exactly the same personality, the same type, in the same elite group, I might add, which was doing work with communists and Russians, with Czechoslovakians and with Romanians. I met assassins, I met drug lords, Fahim Cordabawi, whose family were the drug lords in the Bekaa Valley. He knows the elite of the elite of the elite, and that's why I was warned twice not to talk.
And you were warned...
I was told that I would be killed. I was told that
your
I
husband would, warned you about this, or
oh, my husband warned me early on in it, but he knew that he loved me in the beginning. I'm sure he really did, but he's a robot, my husband, except when he's drinking, and I think that's why he drank, because the first 3 years of marriage, he was telling me everything. And I come from a very strong Protestant Southern culture, which, you know, when you're talking about shooting people like ducks, the only thing I can relate it to is my brother's going duck hunting, and that's what George would tell me it was like.
Uh-huh.
Killing is just, you know, it's nothing. There's no emotion involved. You just get rid of somebody. And he said he was an existentialist and that these murders were necessary. And, you know, very matter of fact. And I'd sort of go, uh-huh, yep. And we'd be eating dinner. And I was trying to get him to know Christ, you know, to sort of understand a little bit about yeah. my background and America's background. But his group, they are not Christians. They're what he calls existentialist,
uh-huh.
and they study German Clausewitz and Nietzsche, Sartre, Camus, Montesquieu. And his thesis at Princeton, which was written for him by a very good friend of his named Todeve, who was a French count, and his thesis was on this.
Hmm.
And it was, supposedly, it was in French, but my French is better than his. So he could not have written that by himself. I know that. I know it was written for him. But in the intelligence world, and in the communist world, and the world that my husband was in, one had to know French because all of the terrorist trainers and the guys who were funding all the guerrillas and everything were in Paris and New Orleans. They would go back and forth. Still, the 4th Marines is out of New Orleans. And that's been going on a long time, ever since Disraeli, even before, I think. But they had hit squads and, you know, undercover groups in New Orleans. And George would go to New Orleans, all the Marines. I mean, this is where they train, do terrorist training, Lake Pontchartrain and places like that.
Okay, and then this would be during the 1980s?
Yeah, 1980s.
Okay.
From the 19, I think New Orleans has been a school for a place where debauchery and murder and cults and
flourished.
Yeah.
Well, there's a New Orleans connection with the JF Kennedy assassination.
Well, you see, Oswald, my husband and Oswald were in the same club. General Jim Joy is in that club. General Louis Buell, who is my husband's benefactor, or whatever you want to call it, is in that club. There is a, in fact, I've got the name of, they're Russians in that club.
Yeah, feel free to grab any reference material.
Yeah, what I want to tell you about General Al Gray, my husband was the chief of staff for General Al Gray, who was the commandant of the Marine Corps. And I probably shouldn't say this on the tape, and you all can get rid of it, but he's a homosexual.
Gray.
Okay. He's what they call a cherry Marine. Now, I'm not anti. I'm trying to find my... I hope I've got it. Yeah, here it is.
Cherry Marine. That's a common phrase that's in the military.
See, the thing is, they're guys and they're girls, and I just came from such a real prudish culture.
Yeah.
You know.
That's fine. You came from a normal culture.
And I'm not judging them, but they, the Vietnam War, I know a lot about that, about the MACSOG program. And the Phoenix program, because George was involved with a very important part of that, not important really, but he and Al Gray and Louis Buell and Michael O'Boyle and Ollie Whipple were, do you remember the Manguez and the... Pueblo, was it the
seizure of that little ship?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's run by the mob. Then it was a mob military partnership, joint. It was a joint operation in Korea and in Vietnam. The highest levels of the Marine Corps and the Army in those special operations levels, the individuals are actually in the mob. New
You're
Jersey.
You're talking about the mafia type mob?
I'm talking about the Brooklyn, New Jersey mob. My husband, Al Gray, Sheehan, they're all Brooklyn. Cap Weinberger. Heinz Kissinger, there's the Boston mob, which was shipping weapons back and forth to Northern Ireland. And I don't want to get too deeply involved in that, but it goes, Israel, some of the Zionists who came over from Germany, according to my husband, were, he works with those people. They do a lot of money laundering in the banks, cash transactions for the drugs that they're bringing over, through Latin America, the Southern Mafia, the Dixie Mafia, which is now my husband's involved with in Miami. The military are all involved once they retire. They're, they go into this drug and secondary weapon sales. And Before I forget, I want to find the name of this Russian who worked with Al Gray, who was my husband's boss, and trying to see where I wrote it. I may have to look and find that another.
It's no trouble at all. How are we doing over there, guys? Sound good? How much time is that rolled on the clock? On your clock? You can speak. That's a
20 minutes.
20? Okay, good.
I can't find it right now. I'll find it. No. Vietnam was really important because a lot of experiments were done on boys who went over there. Mm-hmm. I had, since my husband disappeared and since they have been psychologically trying to destroy me, financially trying to destroy me, because I'm telling the truth. His first wife, I know, was murdered.
Okay.
She was, according to a psychiatrist whose name I probably won't give because he's an honorable man. I was given permission before I went public mm-hmm. with Sarah McClendon at the press club anonymously, but they knew who I was on the 3rd of July, 1996, was when I came out with a small group of people. But before that time, they were trying to handle me, to try and get me to be quiet. They tried threatening me and so forth. And I'm trying to remember where I was, the point I was going to make. I can't remember now what I was going to... it was something important. Oh, yeah, General Jim Joy... I called General Jim Joy on the phone. I was trying to find where my husband was because I didn't know whether I'd have any money to, you know, food to eat or what. He just walked away, and I knew that the Marine Corps knew where he was. But I was being handled psychologically. On the 4th of March, my home was broken into. They had elaborate plans to handle me.
The 4th of March, 1996.
And keep in mind, he had disappeared on the 28th of December.
Of 96,
95.
Okay, uh-huh.
So, put yourself in my shoes. I have no idea where he is. He's done this before. But, and each time, I was totally traumatized.
What happened during this break-in?
Well, they were looking for the diary, which I have here.
Okay.
I don't have the original copy, but this is the diary.
Okay, can you lift that up?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just...
This is it. It's his Beirut diary.
Kind of hold it. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is it.
Okay.
And it's in his handwriting. The Beirut diary tells how the... intelligence community, the Army and Marine Corps assassins, snipers, are how they operate in a city during a crisis. My husband was the liaison between the White House and President Jamal. So my husband is a friend of Scowcroft, McFarland's a Marine. All of these men are personal friends of George's. Colby, I spoke with personally on the phone. 2 weeks later, he was murdered. He went to Princeton. My husband knew him. He knew my husband. He told me, Colby told me that...
Now this is General Colby?
No, this is William Colby, who was head of the CIA.
Oh, okay, yes.
Who was murdered in a...
so-called boating accident.
I know exactly how that happened because... You see, the SEAL Team 6, mm-hmm. 4, 6, and 8 are on the East Coast, and then the odd numbers are on the West Coast. And some of the people who are affiliated with the SEALs.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say that. I'm not going to say it. But
it wouldn't be hard for a SEAL to come from underwater and tip the boat over and make sure the man's dead, that sort of thing.
The Israelis train with the SEALs. They do a lot of wet ops murders over here because of some sort of arrangement. The young boys, I met three young assassins on a bus going up back and forth to Sarah as I went on the bus because they were sabotaging my car so often. So I sat next to two young assassins, one from Romania, one from Haiti. And I let them know that I understand, you know, how it is. And this little boy cried. I won't mention which one it was because it may get back to him. But he told me it was the same scenario. His mother, he lives on $850 a month. Now, these are mercenaries working. The taxpayers are paying mercenaries. The taxpayers are paying young men who are not citizens of the United States to kill innocent people, women and children. They get on a flight from Norfolk and Oceania. Mm-hmm. They fly to Stuttgart, and I was told this is what they do. Then they go by a special helicopter to countries like Turkey, like the part of Iraq, to Algeria, to parts of Africa, and they do wet ops. They'll just, you know, murder 5, 10, 20 people, and then they blame it on the Arabs, or they blame it on somebody else, but it's actually NATO rogue assassins, because there are men from Australia, South Africa, Britain, that I've been able to determine, and a lot of these other little countries that are sort of wanting to get into NATO, they have little boys that they pick out, and they call them special. They use the word special, meaning elite, irregular, in order to entice these boys because they don't have much ego. Mm-hmm. So if you call being a criminal, in other words, they are protected. They know that they are above the law. That's what my husband's above the law. Judge John Moore is above the law. Colonel Barry Cantor, my husband's JAG colonel lawyer, is above the law. Grover Wright, Marine Corps, a lot of these guys who were judges had their wives gotten rid of. Judge John Moore had his first wife thrown into a mental institution before he became a judge. He battered her. And I spoke with a man who has a Purple Heart, two people who knew Hannah very well. And Hannah Moore was deeply in love with her husband. He got back from Vietnam. He was an Army Ranger. He battered her. He physically and psychologically abused her. And she started screaming, you know, doing what because I was battered and bruised. A lot of wives are by these Vietnam vets. But if they're a colonel or if they're a rising star, the wife has got to be crazy. Because they've got too much invested in these men, and it's a very small cult. I mean, I have heard the things that they do when they're colonels. It's some of the same things that they do in Cap and Gown, which is the Princeton version of Skull and Bones. My husband went to Princeton after he went to the Hun School for 4 years.
Okay, now we should probably clarify a little bit about, you mentioned Skull and Bones, and many of the people wouldn't be familiar with that, and the Cap and Gown. So what are these these clubs that these young inductees are pulled into, secret societies.
Secret societies. And
again, is this to make them feel super special?
Yes.
And also put a control on them,
yes,
so that you never tell these secrets?
Yes. Oh. That's it. You have got it.
You know, I've heard a lot of child molesters. I mean, people, yes, who are not connected with the military, just plain old child molesters, will molest a child and then tell them, now, if you ever tell, you know, they'll take a cat and strangle it and kill it or something. This is what I'm going to do to your mother. This is,
yes,
what I'll do to you.
Yes.
Bad things will happen if you ever tell.
That's right.
And children grow up believing that I must never, ever tell. And they don't, generally.
That's right.
Unless someone comes along to help them see the light and come out,
yes,
of it.
Yes. And you see, my husband is frightened to death. I believe that his brother was murdered to keep him in. Because he had gone through 4 years of this mind control. And the man who did it, you can see this on the video. His name was Charles Caddock, and another man named Alexander Robinson.
Okay, Charles Caddock.
Caddock.
And the other one?
Alexander Robinson. Alexander Robinson was a Marine, very well-connected Presbyterian family,
mm-hmm,
whose family member was the influential one who brought over the Saudis. The original Saudi head of Saudi Arabia was very, George told me all this about Mohammed Faisal, Khalid Faisal, and Saud Faisal, and there were something like 32 brothers of the then, in the mid-50s, the ordained, you know, whoever was head of Saudi Arabia. It was actually the United States who chose that person, because the United States, through Charles Caddock and that group, murdered the good one, the one whom everybody liked, who was well educated, and who was normal. In, I believe it was 1952, 1953, 1954, in Paris, the universal Saudi, the well-educated Saudi, was poisoned.
And what was his name?
Charles Caddock.
I don't suppose it's all that important, but anyway.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was Fahim, or he died in Paris. And so his brother, his half-brother or whatever, who was the father of all these 32 boys, and the three oldest now were snuck into the United States. I have a degree in history, Virginia history, undergraduate degree, and master's in Scottish history. And being a Southerner, we always look at, you know, past is prologue. And I jumped into the Saudi Arabian books to try and find out something about the Hun School, which is in Princeton, started by a physicist connected with Einstein and that group. So I was looking for the Hun School because I knew they went there. And they're in all the brochures. They're very proud to say, you know, we have the Saudi royals went here. President Cheeseborough brags about going over there and being wined and dined, and, you know. So I only found one reference, but it was a reference that said something like they went to a prep school in the United States. That's all they said. Well, it was the Hun School, and my husband was one of the playmates. Charles Caddock was the bodyguard, quote-unquote, teacher,
mm-hmm,
for these guys. So they would go out and play in the woods, and they were doing homosexual things with them. You know, I mean, there was a lot of money. They bought a big house.
Yeah.
And so.
Okay, now, I was momentarily distracted.
Okay.
Explain to me a little bit about this, the homosexual event here.
Well, George, for the first 3 years of our marriage, was drinking entirely too much. And he was trying to let me know about his world, and I'm not judging him. He's a bisexual.
Okay. And he needed help.
He needed help. He needed love. He needed Christ. He still does. Mm-hmm. He really needs help. And the handlers knew that I was changing him. I was taking him away from this crazy cult that he'd been in all these years. And I mean, we were going to church. He even walked down the aisle one time when Tony Evans preached at Scope. I mean, he was overwhelmed. And
at Scope, no,
at Scope in Norfolk. It's a big auditorium.
Okay.
And so, but he was a little boy when he was, it's mind control. MK Ultra, somebody said. They had a group of men, psychiatrists in New Jersey. I don't know where this place was, but they would go, and even his roommates in Princeton told me about it. George never, intentionally, he never introduced me to any of his friends. So I had to cold call all these people. I got their names and addresses, telephone numbers. I called all these roommates at the Hunt School and at Princeton. Mm-hmm. They told me things about George and, you know, holding hands with, you know, with Caddock and other people, about being a cheerleader and going off and so forth.
Now, a cheerleader, this is a kind of a trade name, right?
No, he was a cheerleader for the...
At Princeton.
Okay. And he traveled with the football team.
Okay.
And here is a guy like that. They put him in the Marine Corps. I don't think that was very nice. Do you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. It was hard for him. But
it was part of the long-term vision.
Absolutely. They wanted him long-term. And it's because of the Saudis. This is what I believe and what his roommate believes. He had a roommate at Princeton who was also at the Hun, who's a dear, dear, wonderful. His mother is an Anglican. His father was a Jewish doctor from Brooklyn. And Jack is a dear, and we talk to each other a lot on the phone. George sort of, you know, dismissed him because George was getting in with another crowd. George got into Cap and Gown, which is the same kind of fraternity. I mean, it's an eating club at Princeton for intelligence officers.
It's Cap and Gown. Would they have anybody involved that wasn't intelligence-oriented?
Football players and so forth. But I have a feeling that Cap and Gown has a lot of intelligence officers and boys who may have been raped. Of course, they'd never talk about it.
Right.
But I know that the initiation is, they get very drunk, and even in the Marine Corps they do that. It's called dining in. They have the shellback ceremony. They do a lot of homosexual enticement. The boys are, when they come in, when they're new recruits, they strip them nude, they violate their personal parts. There's a lot of that is going on.
What about
even now?
Tailhook.
Yeah.
Is there a connection?
Yeah, sure. Because the cream of the crop is doing this. They're having group sex parties.
And that was a Navy operation too, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the Navy and the Marine Corps.
Of course, that Tailhook, they don't know anything about. Tailhook was, refresh our memories.
Well, Tailhook, in fact, I when I was single in Norfolk, I know one of the people who was deeply involved with Tailhook, who was the captain of the Saratoga, was very much involved with this kind of behavior. And I know a lot about the... See, I never thought about group sex. This is so awful for me to contemplate that these orgies are going on all over the Mediterranean, that the captains, lieutenants, the men who rise to the top are the ones who are picked to play the games, the pool parties, the nude pool parties. And they have secretaries who come in. I've talked to three guys, and of course my husband, mm-hmm. who went to these parties. But they what they do is, and this is General Al Gray, who was the main prime mover, mm-hmm. They would go to a place like Esle Rose, where Charles Caddick, this teacher who inducted, uh-huh. got my husband into it, he retired in one of these all-male party houses on the Mediterranean. I mean, that's where he... And my husband kept up with him all through the years.
But these sex parties and orgies, they're all homosexual in nature, or
well,
is there some heterosexual?
They start off with the wild secretaries. It's kind of, you know, my husband did those in Indonesia. He did them at a place in Northern Virginia with his first wife. I did not know any of this. Mm-hmm. I knew absolutely none of this when I married him. He told me he was loyal to his wife. He wanted me to think he was just apple pie, because yeah. I'm just a one-man woman.
Right.
When I took that oath to marry him,
right.
love, honor, and obey, that's me. But he, when he was married to his first wife, was just an addict. He was a sexual addict, an alcoholic addict. He loves, you know, terror, and his whole little soul was just being sucked away from him desperately. And he needs Christ. He needed me day in and day out. He did not need to be... What he's doing now is running more of these operations.
You know, as you describe this, I can't help but think of Bill Clinton.
Well, of course he was. He was one of those profile boys.
Uh-huh.
But the difference between Bill Clinton, and I'm not saying Bill Clinton's better, but Bill Clinton did not go, he didn't know anything about the assassinations. Bill Clinton, when I was living with Sarah McClendon, the senior White House correspondent who saved my life, because she said, Mrs. Griggs, you get up here to Washington right now or you're dead. You're going to be dead. And I still feel as though I probably will be. I'll certainly be financially ruined. They are still doing psychological operations in my home, sabotaging my car, messing with my telephone, my radio. You cannot believe what I've been through in the last 2 years. It is horrible. And it's being done to other women and other wives and other men who don't go along with the program. They are murdering Marines. They're murdering sailors.
Of course, one of the best ways for you to stay alive is
yes.
to do what you're doing.
Really?
Reduce this. Oh, absolutely. Reduce this to video. Get this scattered all over the country. They won't touch you, because if you're dead, that validates everything you're saying. See? So.
Well, they poison people.
Publicity is the best thing you can
yeah,
do.
Yeah. One of the things that was happening to me after, oh, I must tell you about General Joy. I found his name all through the diary. And what was really strange was that George had mentioned him early on in the marriage, but then after a certain incident at Camp Lejeune, which I think is very interesting relating to Tailhook and something that I did there. I'll tell you about that if I can remember. I called. It took a lot for me to get General Joy's phone number,
uh-huh.
because the Marine colonels were not going to tell me. Because they knew I was investigating.
Uh-huh.
So nobody would tell me about General Joy. I called a person in George's address book who was a general, pretending that you know, I was updating my Christmas card list.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to find Jim Joy's telephone number. He said, oh, he's up there. He's running morale, welfare, recreation for the world. You know, a payoff job with the mob. And he's living outside of Quantico. And here's his phone number. So I call him up. And keep in mind, my husband is infamous. Princeton graduate, chief of staff for Al Gray, who runs all the dirty tricks for the Army. You know, Linda Tripp worked for Carl Steiner, who was a partner of, you know, Jim Joy and Carl Steiner and my husband were the triumvirate in Beirut.
Okay.
And Linda Tripp worked for Carl Steiner down there. In,
this would be approximately?
In the, I think in the 80s. She and her husband were both Delta Force duos. They send them, but then they divorced, so that broke up that.
Mm.
But she's a dirty tricks person, Linda. Anyway, so I call General Joy and I say, General Joy, this is Kay Griggs, and I'm George Griggs's wife. You know, chief of staff under Al Gray, head of half the world, dirty tricks, special operations, wet ops. And he goes, no. I don't believe I know your husband. Exactly his words.
Huh.
And I'm taping it, by the way. Because they took my tape. They started coming in and doing, putting sticky stuff and running my, you know, just mind jagging me.
Putting sticky stuff.
On the tapes, and they would put the tapes on different, you know, they would go to a lot of trouble. They would take things that I said on one tape and put it on another. And, I mean, it was, they were having fun with me, psychologically. But I taped this conversation with General Joy. And I said, well, that's really strange, General Joy, that you don't know my husband, because I'm sitting here on my bed, and I'm looking at my husband's diary that he kept the whole time he was in Beirut. And you're in there almost on every page, you know, you're in there a lot. And you're going over to Cyprus and Rome, and you're, you know, getting money for weapons, and, you know, and then they're going to Tel Aviv, and they're doing this and that. And you know, I said, you mean you don't know my husband, George Griggs? And you're a Marine, and he's a colonel? He went, oh, that George Griggs. Because he knew I had the diary.
I see.
Then he said, oh, Miss Griggs, let me call you back. Let me call you back. So he had to confer with General Sheehan, General Joy, General Gaiman, General Hartsog, and his little cabal, particularly General Gray and General Krulak. So he called me back. And he was just like a little puppy dog. He said, oh, Ms. Griggs, I'm going to be in Norfolk on the, let's see, the night of the 5th, 6th, and 7th. I'll be at a morale welfare recreation meeting at the Marriott Hotel. And I would like to meet with you when I get there. You know, I'll be getting in around 5 o'clock, and I could meet, we could go to dinner, or you could come and have breakfast the next morning. We could eat, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or 11 o'clock, you know, now I have to speak at this luncheon engagement. You're welcome to come to that. Or we can meet at. He went through every hour of the whole time. He could not have been more insistent about meeting me if he'd been my father, you know, my birthday or something. And so
you did meet.
I did, but I was afraid of him, because
I
knew he was
General
an assassin.
Joy.
General Jim Joy, the one who got Noriega out of Panama, he and Sheehan, the one who was behind the whole operation in Panama. This is a powerful guy. He and Carl Steiner, Mutt and Jeff, Waco. They trained all the guys Waco, who went and did what they did to David Koresh. They're the ones behind all the black helicopters and Sheehan. They're the ones, you know, doing all the stuff down there at Kathy McDaniel's, down at, you know, in Fort Polk, Fort Hood.
Something new on me. Kathy McDaniel?
Kathy McDaniels had a little talk show. She's a wife of the daughter of the mayor down there at Fort Polk.
Okay.
The little town outside of Fort Polk. And there were a lot of unusual things happening. And because she was talking about it, they took her radio show off the air. And they tried to, it's a long story, but anyway, so General Joy, I got in contact with the NCIS.
That's Fort Polk in Louisiana.
Yeah. But I met with the NCIS guy and a Marine that I just met cold call, because I was kind of worried about what would happen to me, you know, meeting him. So may I go to the ladies' room?
Certainly, mate. Matter of fact, Steve suggested
I've
that we break.
I've had to sort of go to the late. That's why I've been sort of antsy.
Steve suggests we break at 5 after, and I think it was a good idea. Let's break, and we'll pick up right where we're leaving. We're rolling. Is this rolling? All three cameras rolling right now. They are rolling. Good. Everybody check in. All right. Here we go. Okay. Now, Steve, come on over here and take a quick glance at this monitor. Notice how she's framed here. Does mine correspond about the same? So we cut back and forth. We are.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Actually, yours is like you say. Yours is a little bit tighter.
Okay, just take it wide.
You want this one a little tighter?
No. Okay. She's just right.
Hey, I have the perfect reference. I can tell now those chairs are giving you a perfect reference.
Except that I'm a little bigger than she is, so I may stand a little taller in the chair.
The distance, maybe. I'm just going to hold what she says.
Okay. Yeah, we don't have to split hairs over it. Okay, we're rolling. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition. We have liftoff. We're rolling. This is part number 2 of this interview. All right. Now, we have discussed just a little bit of a recap here. All right. A little bit about your background, about the psychological profile that these guys look for. Let's see. We've discussed the diary. We've discussed Kadok and Alexander
Robinson.
Robinson, couldn't read my writing. Thank you. And
I have a picture of Kadok.
Yes, I noted that. We're going to inject that. We'll inject. In fact, we should have a little session here where we just go through pictures at the tail end of this.
Yeah.
Picture. Yeah. We discussed tail hook and.
You know what tail hook means, don't you?
No, what is tail hook? Uh-oh. I got a feeling. Is it a homosexual reference?
Yeah, sure.
Really?
Sure.
Did you know that, Steve? Isn't it something?
Yeah.
The average person on the street has no idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Watergate. Well, the Watergate Hotel, that makes sense. And tail hook probably is some reference to, you know what I honestly thought it was? When you refuel a jet or something.
It is. But the planes look like this. Because, see, I was told this by Jerry Unruh. And Jerry Unruh was a captain when I met him we were just partying. You know, I had a group of gals, and we were all school friends. And everybody hung around this place called Poppy's in Virginia Beach. It was the place in the mid-'80s when I was at the Virginia Center for World Trade. Well, Jerry was in there. He's an intelligence operative with Scrowcroft, Crow, you know, this whole McFarlane, Ed Wilson, who's a really good friend of my husband's, who's a really bad guy. Anyway, they're all some of them are doing this Rush River Lodge thing, you know, which Angleton was doing, where Woodward would go to these big orgy parties. Uh-huh. And George went to a few of those. But this, you see, is the plane, and it kind of looks like that.
Okay.
And it refuels.
Uh-huh.
See, that's what the hook is for.
That's refueling. Called the tail hook.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But it has a double meaning.
A double entendre, sure.
Because and I went to the preceding show 2 weeks ago, and they had the tailhook booth, and I have some stuff, I don't think I have it with me, but tailhook souvenirs, because they are really trying to promote that, you know, the charitable function of that organization.
Yes, of course. Now, the fact that that cover got blown on those tailhook things, that was a major snafu, right?
She had to try very hard to get that out.
That was at Camp Lejeune?
No, I think it was in Las Vegas.
Okay.
But, oh, my thing went on in Camp Lejeune before tailhook, and this is why I got flagged.
Oh.
Because I stopped all the go-go dancers in the officers' clubs, and they got very mad with me.
Ooh.
I can tell you that story. It's true.
Yeah, but why, you didn't realize what you're doing at the
no,
time?
No, I was just incensed, you know, that they would allow topless women, young girls, in the officers' club dining room while I was trying to eat late one night. And George says, well, you know, you just have to get used to it. If you think this is anything, you ought to see what goes on in Okinawa. Well, this was 91. It was before tailhook. And the Lord is always with me. Sometimes I don't know where he is, but this particular night, it was about 9 o'clock, and I was starving. And I was really mad because his reaction wasn't, I'm sorry, this is offensive. Do you want to go in town to eat or something? He didn't do that. He attacked me. It was a chance to educate me the way they were educated.
I see.
Get used to it, bitch. You know, excuse my French.
That's right.
But that's really what he was trying to do. Well, they were all young married officers. Now, I worked at the chamber, and this is taxpayer money. This looks bad. They had, you know, wedding bands on. And one of the guys, two of the guys goes out with one of the girls. So I'm going, after having said, don't you see anything wrong with this picture?
Uh-huh.
And getting no background, I thought, oh, boy, I've got a camera in my pocketbook. I am going to see Marty and Oogie, my old roommate from St. Mary's, little Episcopal Junior College in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I said, whoa, little Lucille Ball comes out. And I just kind of grabbed that little camera with the flash, and I get me three little flashes of scattering people. So
just right. Because the camera's going off.
Yes. So that said to me, it proved to him, God, truth is light, light is truth. You know, hey, this isn't. I mean, God proved it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do it. I didn't argue. I just took pictures. They scattered. Then what happened?
What happened to the pictures?
Well, he tried to grab my camera.
He?
My husband.
Right.
But there were still some men in there, you see, and two of the girls. And they were looking at me like, you are, the girls were probably thinking, oh, you know, but the guys, they saw older colonel, chief of staff here, wife. It was bad from the perspective of me being a wife, witnessing this, being ordered to shut up.
Uh-huh.
So I took the camera.
Be a connection wise, some people just
hook, and especially General Joy and General Carl Steiner are They're evil. Steiner's Army, Dirty Tricks, Special Operations.
Gray.
Okay. He's what they call a cherry Marine. Away, and I knew that the Marine Corps knew where he was. So I sat next to two young, he's like Turkey, like the Judge John Moore is above the law. Colonel Barry King, after he went to the Hun School for 4 years.
Okay, now we should probably...
That's it. You have got it.
We'll molest a child and then tell them. Now, if you ever tell, you know, they'll take a cat and strangle it.
That his brother was murdered to keep him back into the United States. I have a degree. I only found one reference, but it was a reference to the quote teacher for these guys doing homosexual things with them. And so, psychiatrist in New Jersey. I don't know where this playing off and so forth.
Yeah, a cheerleader. This is a kind of a trait.
Do you know what I'm saying? It was hard for him. Wanted that long term. And it's because Chris is an Anglican, his father was a Jewish doctor from Brooklyn.
Captain Guile, would they have anybody involved that wasn't intelligent?
Yes. They get very drunk, and even in the Marine Corps. Yeah.
Is there a connection?
Yeah, sure, because this... But the Navy and the Marine Corps...
Of course, not me.
Of this. Mm-hmm. I knew absolutely none of this when I married.
Validates everything you're saying, see. So...
Well, they poison people after... Oh, I must tell you about General Joy. And what was really strange was that George had mentioned a person in George's address book who was a general. I just wanted to find Jim Joy's telephone number. He said, he's at the mob.
Uh-huh.
And he's up. And keep in mind, my husband, the world, Dirty Tricks, Special Operations, Wet Ops. And exactly his words. Huh. And I'm taking Daniels down at, in Fort Polk, meeting him.
Parties.
So, and George went to a few of those. But this fuels.
Uh-huh.
See, that's what the hook is for.
That's called a tail hook.
Well, for tail hook, and this is why I got flagged.
But why, you didn't realize what you're doing at the time?
No, I was just... What happened?
What happened to the pictures?
Well,